Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to talk with us about one of the new and emerging themes in practice. Welcome, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen.
So I thought I might start with a little bit of context. So what we realized recently is that so often when we're on retreat or in meetings or trainings or that sort of thing at the monastery, things get pretty exciting and expansive and all those sorts of things, and insights start dropping in. And very often, kind of the next piece of practice falls into place, you know, practice being very dynamic, like life, constantly changing and in flux and seeing new things and going deeper. And we recently had one of those. We had a training where we had just saw tons of great new stuff and realized, I think it was Sherry who made the point, gosh, it would be so great to feature these kinds of topics as they come up on the Good News as a way of really including the whole Sangha in the conversation and keeping everyone right along so that it's not just for the folks who happen to have been there physically at the time that it happened, but that they can really become part of the language, the conversation of practice, if you will. So, in that vein, the one that we thought we might talk about this evening is innocence versus unconsciousness. And so the way that I heard us kind of talking about it in a nutshell is, so we think, as we're talking about what goes on with us, you know, it's sort of this, so there I was just innocently going along doing my thing, and then bam, you know, whatever happens. And we had a really helpful conversation around kind of the distinction between innocence and unconsciousness and how helpful it is in practice to be able to see the difference between those two things. And so I wondered if you might speak a little bit to that.
Sure. And Jen, I think what we were looking at is, you know, something happens, and basically what's going on at that time is that there is no consciousness, that
right.
We are actually unconscious.
Yeah.
And then something arises, the system is setting up the fall, if you will, in order for us to feel bad.
Yeah.
And so because our attention is on the voices of karmic conditioning, we're not paying attention, and then something happens, and suddenly we are brought to the present moment where we're in a situation where there's some little person there who is getting the brunt of the beating, if you will, and is feeling bad about it. And the misunderstanding that we're looking at in practice right now is that practice becomes about nurturing this little person who is innocently being left to take the beatings by conditioning, without realizing that what we're practicing is really growing the awareness, the grown-up awareness, the conscious, compassionate awareness that can always be paying attention,
yeah.
So that the little person is actually not being left to take the brunt of the meetings because we went unconscious.
Yes, exactly. So that's the beginning of the misunderstanding is, there I am just going along doing my thing. You know, I don't know quite if innocence is the word that fits there, but at any rate, to really get it, oh, what's going on in there is unconsciousness. I'm going along, quote, just being me, but not really home, not actually there. And as you say, in that not being there, conditioning has just a wide open door to set me up for the fall of suffering.
That's correct. And what I would say, what was coming up for me when you said that is the word, the way you phrased it is, I'm just going along being me. In other words, there's an identity that is being maintained,
yes.
In, and that's maintaining the system of the illusion of separation,
yes.
Which means that there's no consciousness present, and consciousness in the form of awareness. And so if we're looking at it in the models that we talk about in practice, there's a little person who we are trying to save and, you know, with whom we're trying to develop a relationship, an aspect, a young aspect of the personality that needs to be mentored and needs to be released from a very stuck place and embraced in conscious, compassionate awareness. That's one way we develop that sense of compassion. But the focus of our practice is developing the awareness that can be present all the time. And this quality or this aspect, if you will, is really that which keeps attention or awareness all the time so life can live the form.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're cultivating. And so long as that operates, then we're not listening. The attention is not on egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And then the system doesn't have a way to set us up for a fall and make us feel bad. And the person receiving the feeling bad is the little person.
Right, right. Because we're always there. We being sort of a synonym for conscious compassion and awareness is always there. So no
right.
matter what's happening, whether it's, you know, not what my first choice or not always happy and gleeful or whatever, in the much larger sense, it's completely okay.
That's right. And if we do go unconscious, then when we come to, what comes to is awareness that will not, that has the awareness of not being afraid and not knowing that there's nothing wrong and not the child, right? So
yes.
that the way we prevent the beating, the not feeling bad
exactly.
part of the conversation that we were having is that awareness is present. Okay, so there was an identification at that time. We know what it's about. Let's drop that. And now that way we're growing that sense of authenticity, which is appropriate to the situation that's coming up.
Yeah.
In other words, the innocence, the authenticity of the innocence of the young person is not equipped to deal with that situation. It's not an appropriate response, which is why karmic conditioning wants to make sure that we are listening to it instead of developing the awareness, the attention on awareness that's able to be present to any situation appropriately that life is arising.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the sort of as we begin practice, or that what we're doing is we're reassuring these really young parts of ourselves who have just been the recipients of constant internal beating, and that what I hear you saying is that sort of the largest reassurance, if you will, is to never go unconscious and leave them unattended.
Well, that's what we're practicing, and knowing that the system is there and it's always there and it's never not going to be there, that if we do end up going unconscious,
yeah.
then it's actually an opportunity to grow consciousness, not to take a beating.
And which is the connection, as you just said a minute ago, with what we talked to, I think it was Penny, about a few weeks ago of the not feeling bad. That's where that piece fits in. Is when we do, I mean, of course we'll go unconscious. I mean, that's just what happens, right? I mean, we go unconscious and we come back, and we go unconscious and we come back. But the huge revolutionary behavior change there is when we come back to realizing, oh, I'm back. I'm in presence. I'm in awareness, celebrating that, recognizing that, and that's the not feeling bad.
Absolutely. In other words, when we return, we realize we're in the garden and we grow our experience of being in the garden and dealing with situations and staying in the garden in as situations arise.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think a powerful piece of it for me was in that sort of innocence and unconsciousness conversation was to really get what's what, in the sense of that just dee-dee-dee-dee going around is not actually something I want to do. It doesn't serve me. It's not headed anywhere I want to be. I want to always be there, which isn't, you know, I mean, I think people can kind of turn that into, okay, I've always got to try hard. And, you know, I mean, that's just the other side of duality. It's not that, but it's that I want to be here all the time. You know, I don't want to take vacations. I don't want to metaphorically or literally turn on the television. I want to be here for all of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You want to be there for all of it. And, you know, the pernicious part of what we also realize in the conversation is if we go unconscious and then we decide that is just innocence, there's a little girl that needs to be nurtured or needs to be taken care of, and practice becomes all about rescuing this little person, then it's not about actually developing the grown-up, I'll say for lack of a better word, awareness and presence, and the system is actually one. Because it has successfully redirected the attention on solving for the problem that is not the problem. The child is fine.
Mm-hmm.
The child is not supposed to be in certain situations. She needs love and compassion and attention to get out of the stuck place that she's in. But really, the practice focus is about developing the awareness.
Yeah.
And if we get redirected to solving a problem that doesn't exist, which is this poor child who needs to be taken care of, instead of being the conscious, compassionate awareness, the system's just one.
Ah, well, that's an interesting nuance. Yeah. And would you say that in us returning, when we are back to the present, what that child needs, he or she has, just in that very movement of us being back in the present, conscious, aware, you know, they have what they need in that.
Yes, and actually, hopefully, if they keep coming back to the place where they're left to take the beating, then they're not actually going to be in relationship or trusting relationship with a grown-up that makes sure that they're not there left to take the beating.
Yeah, and that's a good point to throw in there, too, because if there's a long history of that happening, you know, taking a beating, going back unconscious, oh, I'm so sorry, going back unconscious, oh, I'm so sorry, there is a lack of trust that's built. So there can be sort of a transition period in there where the trust needs to be built back up. So, you know, it's the old, oh, gosh, it's not working, why isn't it working? Well, it is working. It's just that there may be a time where that trust has to be built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not necessarily the same. I mean, in some senses, they may or may not be the same process, right? So yes, you are. We want to reclaim those aspects of personality that have been suppressed or surviving or are subject to conditioning as a process of developing the compassion that we are. Right? That assists us in doing that, just as a relationship with the mentor assists us in developing the compassion that we are. And developing the compassion that we are is what we're going for, because that is what will ensure that attention is on awareness, and awareness is attending to attention, and presence is what we are over time. Those are mechanisms by which we develop that ability in ourselves. And so, you know, they're important and they are steps, but to not confuse the fact that we also have to develop conscious, compassionate awareness and not hide under the innocence of the child that needs to be rescued.
Yeah. And I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but that was perfect what you said a minute ago. Practice being the presence that we are. We're not changing into anything. We're not getting better. We're practicing being what we are.
That's right. Yeah. Right. So as a little person, we are authentic and open and available to life, and then all of these different survival strategies get packed onto us, and then we become the survival strategy. The child is stuck underneath that. We liberate the child by conscious, compassionate awareness that embraces the child. We also then have the freedom to grow that awareness to deal with what life is throwing our way as an appropriate response to what that grown-up consciousness might look like in life, instead of child consciousness that's authentic.
Yeah. Boy, there are so many other things I could say right now, but I'm afraid we're going to have to pass it over to Sherry and Michael. Ashwini,
yes.
Thank you so much for starting the conversation with us, I should say. I'm sure there are many more to come.
Well, hopefully we'll keep picking this up in all of our conversations.
Yeah, I think it would be great. Thank you so much for articulating it for us.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Nice
that
to
was
hear
stimulating.
Your voice loud and clear.
Yeah. It's always good when the technology works, huh? That was quite a little conversation, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was great.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people who are listening in might want to include some of that in what we talk about in this part
of
the show. Because that's...
Okay.
It's so important. I'm really glad the conversation is happening in this venue, and I'm committed to doing a blog on it before long, as soon as the email class slows down a little bit, because it really is a critical course correction in our practice, that realization that there was so much misunderstanding about who that child was and what's innocent and what's unconscious and who's saving whom and how that happens. It's good and important to get it in as many of the practice conversations as we can.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. What occurred to me when you said that was my responsibility to work out my own salvation diligently.
Yes. Yeah, and ironically, that dedication, that focus, could get hijacked by conditioning if conditioning were able to convince you that working out your own salvation diligently meant nurturing a child who is who we continue to abandon because we are unconsciously identified with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. I mean, that would be a life work that would go nowhere except into more suffering.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's really big.
Yeah, it's huge. And as you know, I was on retreat recently, and I was seeing what they were talking about, the importance of being a grown-up, taking responsibility for my life.
Yeah, and the phrasing that Ashwini and Jen were just using of being what we are, being the compassion that we are, being the presence that we are, being the awareness that we are, instead of continuing to be confused that we are either some aspect of the personality or something that is in relationship to karmic conditioning, something that is inadequate or incapable or needy or whatever it is that's going on, and just to that realization that no, what we are is Buddha mind. What we are is true nature. That's what we are. And so, again, we don't have to find that or create it or develop it or cultivate it or anything else. We are it. And it's simply a matter of stepping into that.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. And I have some announcements here.
All right.
The What You Practice is What You Have retreat is now open for registration. This is the 8-day follow-up to There Is Nothing Wrong With You. It's facilitated by you, Sherry, and Ashwini, and will help you to see your life through a completely different lens.
Yeah, such a fun and powerful retreat, as I think you know, huh?
Yes, I do know from experience. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the one we say, unlike any Zen retreat you will ever experience. And it's true, isn't it? And, you know, when I was saying those things before it happened, people go, oh, yeah, well, how much? You know, I've been to a lot of Zen retreats, and then it's like, whoa. You weren't just advertising, were you? So that's a true experience. Yeah.
That's true.
In fact, I hope that there are people out there who did it once who are going to do it again, because I don't know how many more times we're going to offer it, but you know, just it's the kind of thing that I've done it many times now, and I always see new things in it, because it's just so unbelievably action-packed that it's not just nuances we can miss in a retreat like that. It's great huge chunks of things, so very fun to repeat.
Great. And also coming up is Not What But How. That's August 17th through 24th. And you'll learn how to use the tools of practice to your best advantage in everyday life.
Yeah, such a great retreat. Completely different. Totally different. And really powerful. Different structure, different everything from the what you practice. But still a powerhouse retreat. And people, you know, because that's one that's been on the schedule every year for 100 years, and, you know, people can hear the voices, and, oh, I've done that. But unless you did this one, you haven't.
Right. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more and to sign up for any of these events. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Dallas.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It took me a minute to put together Janice in Dallas. So, yeah, now I'm right there, centered in on the heart of Texas. Yes.
Yeah. How are you doing?
How are you doing? Good. I'm good. You?
Good. I'm so excited to get on.
What's going on?
What I was looking at seemed like exactly what Jen and Ashwini were talking about. And it's related to doing the email class.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as I was looking at the stressors which cause the EKC self-hate process, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah. Really, I'm a three.
Uh-huh.
I'm fairly certain I'm doing better than everyone else in the class. No, I'm just kidding.
So
okay.
So far, you feel that you've achieved a great deal more than most of the other people in the class?
Nah.
Been
I'm
more
just,
successful?
I'm just yeah. It's just so typical.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, right there.
Self-hate system. But anyway,
uh-huh.
So the stress, you know, it's really, you know, immediately clear to me that the stressors cause, you know, a little bit of stress causes me to work really hard to do my best. And then you add some more stressors on there. And then I'll just give up and failure and spiral downwards. So, you know, the other side of it. And then
mm-hmm.
start again. Pretty
yes.
simple process. So as I was looking at that, I was kind of looking at, well, what's it trying to achieve? What's that system, or why is it even, what I came to was that what is actually what has to be there for it to even exist is, first of all, EKC self-hate feels incomplete or convinces
yes.
I'm unconscious that I feel incomplete.
Yes.
It's hard for me to, I'm
when,
trying not to
so,
hear word I when I don't mean authentic I.
Right. When identified, when a human being, say you or me, when a human being is identified with that system, right, which we call unconscious, right,
mm-hmm.
So it's not that authenticity isn't there, because, of course, authenticity is everything. But the identified human being doesn't know that. Right? It's just
right.
walked into a movie theater, believed that you're the star of the show, and that everything that's happening on the screen, it's one of those IMAX things, or, you know, it's wraparound. So believing that everything that's presented is true and real, and that's how it is. Right, all the stories, all the voices, they're true, they're real, this is my life, right?
Yeah, so then I'm convinced that I'm incomplete, and then the next thing that has to occur is I want something, and then EKC sets an expectation of how I'll get it and how it'll go, and then the stressors come in, I work hard, then more stress, I give up, failure, and then start again. When authentic nature is, you know, complete. So like Ashwini and Jen were saying, if I weren't unconscious, then I wouldn't, you know, I would
right.
know that everything's complete the way it is.
That's right. You wouldn't go down that road in the first place. So if we were, and, you know, they each pointed out, and we always like to point out, we are going to go unconscious. We can just count
yeah.
on that. So but we can do the best case scenario, which is you're going along and you realize that you're having that incomplete feeling. You know, I'm dissatisfied. That it feels like there's something wrong. That can be the big flag for us to go, wait a minute, I must be identifying with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. I must have identified with ego.
I want to throw some content in there because that's when it gets really muddy for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole process is clear to me that that's EKC self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to throw in my current content, which is that I wish my house would have sold so that I could be in the location where my husband lives. And my house not selling is preventing me from doing other things I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's really difficult. It's really difficult to imagine that life circumstance and not get identified with egocentric karmic conditioning. Right?
Yeah, even though I'm present, and it's a lovely life being present here by myself and doing what I do. It's really not,
right.
It's not that bad.
Right. But then the voices start in. And that's kind of the old carrot or the whatever it is that drops down and dangles in front of you. Well, but if you did this or if that were different, and what you could do, and you can start feeling the gears begin to turn, right?
Mm-hmm. But this would be better. Mm-hmm.
This, yes, and so the wheels are turning now, and you took the bait, right? You bought it.
And there's the incompleteness. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Now there's something wrong. There's dissatisfaction. Now you're identified with that person who is outside of life, living in a wrong circumstances, needs to do something, make something different in order to be all right. And now we are looking to those voices for guidance. Okay, well, then, and they've always got a plan, right? So especially for three, right? All right, then what you need to do is you're hooked. Yeah, you're hooked. So then once you're hooked, of course, the only thing that we can do, I mean, it's true, we can wake up at any point and step out of it, but we tend not to. So we just wait until it plays itself out. And now, again, the thing for us to get, and I don't know if it's the hardest thing in practice, but it's right up there with the two or three hardest things in practice. All that system is doing is revving up energy that it can feed off of.
Yeah.
That's all. Mm-hmm. All of the content of it, all of the every detail of it is just created for your benefit to work you up.
So the alternative is being present and just accepting everything as it is and not knowing what's going to happen.
That's it. And what choice do we have? So, right? So now, of course, then what karmic conditioning would say is, well, then you just, you know, you sit on the couch and drink beer and eat bonbons because there's nothing that you can do. But of course, that's not true.
Well, you've just given up. So,
you just give up.
I mean,
right, you
just given up. Work harder.
Right. So those are your two choices. Either work harder, make it happen, or give up and do nothing. But that's not the case. What's available always to us is to continue doing what occurs to us as the things that we can do to go in the direction it seems like we're going, knowing that what we're doing certainly does not come with a guarantee of results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you do all the things that you know how to do to sell a house, and that house is going to sell when it sells. So if we know that, then we are freed up to enjoy what it is that we're doing and not get caught in those expectations that just lead to self-hatred.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing, Janice, that dropped in while you were looking at that, that I think is funny, and at some point you'll tell me if this is true. So the house sells, and you move, and there you are with your husband. And the voices are going to come in and talk to you about how great it was when you were back there in wherever you are now, doing what you were doing, and how fabulous that was.
Yeah, no, that's already occurred to me, that definitely the voices will come in, because it's uncomfortable living quarters right now for a period of time. And yeah, I can just, they would be just going crazy about,
So that's our program, right? That's what we're, now we understand it intellectually, right? So I know there's the menu, right? I know that menu. I have all the ingredients. I've actually cooked it before. I know what it tastes like, right? And now I can't relate to any of it. It doesn't even sound good to me. But I know the menu. I know how to prepare it. I actually know what it's going to taste like. It's going to be good. I just have to do it.
And these are the stressors and flags or the ingredients.
Yep.
That, yeah.
These are the places where it's going to get tricky and the voices are going to kick in, and I have a tendency to believe it, and I'm going to get upset about that, and I always believe the ones that say blah, 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 blah. And we're just working out, seeing it. You know, it's that path through the woods. It's first, you know, however many times you're completely lost. And then it's, oh, yeah, right, I recognize. Okay, there's that. Okay, yeah, I know where I am. Okay, I need to. This gets clearer and easier.
Yeah, recently, I don't know, within the last 2 weeks, I was, we'll just say meltdown, but all I need to do was read the I don't want to, you know, the resistance book.
Uh-huh.
You know, and immediately there was the story about the river of life, and the silt builds up if we're not practicing. So the silt, and you eventually end up in the lake. You're off in the lake, and you don't know you're not in the river of life, right?
Yes.
And so I read that, and then immediately I was like, oh, I've been in the lake. And I was right back. It was all really clear to me that I'd been in the lake. And then immediately, you know, I was back in the river. But, of course, the voice was, it can't be that easy. You can't be in a lake for that long and then just immediately it'd be okay. But I think it gets easier.
Oh, it does. And, of course, the voice is lying. And it's exactly like that. I mean, it's a split second.
Yeah.
And if people would get it, I wish people would believe me about these things when I say it. If people would get it, that it really is that easy. Okay, I was completely identified. I was just in a pit of misery, self-hate, hating everybody, whatever it is. And then, boom, I'm out. Everything is all over. It's all forgiven. There's nothing to review. There's nothing to atone for. There's nothing to feel bad about. It's gone. It's over. I'm here. That's it. Smile, say thank you, and move on.
Yeah, I had that experience because day one of the retreat is to feed the good wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was doing it that day, it was just so clear to me that all I'd been doing was feed the bad wolf. And it was like, oh, done. Okay.
Yeah, there's the good wolf. Get the snacks out. Yeah.
In the lake, I was feeding the bad wolf, but you get it.
Yeah, I gotcha. We got lots of images going in this practice. Very much in the lake, feeding the bad wolf. Yeah.
In the garden. Paying attention to the beauty of the vegetable.
With the big snake coming over the fence. All right.
Okay.
Take good care of yourself, huh? All right.
Okay,
thanks, Janet.
So
good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to break to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. Hello, Sherry. My name is Eric. I've called in before under the name of Eric, the man who couldn't hear the voices.
That's right. I remember that man.
You have a phenomenal memory for the many people that come past you. I was calling in. Something's come up. I'm on a course right now, and something came up, and I was wondering if I was allowed to carry the conversation to open air.
Well, I don't know why you would.
Okay. So I've taken several of your email courses, and you do a great job of, you know, getting, you don't have a dialogue, but we get to have some input, which is wonderful. I'm on the course, the Enneagram course.
Uh-huh.
And I posted a question, the answer came back, and I get it. I just don't know how to do the next step, and I was wondering if you can guide me in that. And what I was answering to for the second question was I turn my frustration, my disappointment into
Eric, you're going along really well, and then all of a sudden we get this kind of weird strobing thing. So say that one and maybe a little bit slower.
Hold on one sec. Just bear with me. Still there?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for stopping me. So it's the second assignment, and I had posted a reply in brief that was saying that my response to dissatisfaction and frustration would become shut down.
Oh, boy. Okay. Michael, are you having as much trouble as I am?
Yes. He's clear for a little bit, and then a little bit stroby.
And then disappears completely.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's try it again, Eric.
I'm not moving, so I'll try it again.
Okay. Let's
no, I mean,
be
I'm not
very,
walking
very
around.
Skilled.
I'm not in the cell phone or anything else. I'll just try and sit right still here, and hopefully nothing interferes.
Okay, good. All right, so there we are in class two, and you wrote in, and I heard the word frustration, and that was the only thing I got.
Okay. So picking up from there, my reply was that when dissatisfaction comes up, my responses would be frustration, disappointment, which over time has evolved into apathy, uninvolvement, procrastination, and I'm way behind in a number of tasks, disappointing people, and you know, so on. That's almost wrote my third class reply. And I said, help, and the answer is, well, there's no help. There's no helpful egocentric karmic conditioning. And understand that don't see the whole answer.
Wait, you're strobing again. You're strobing again. Hang on. Seems like it's funny. It's like it's okay for a little while, and then it builds up. All right, let's try it again.
So
I was with you. There's no help coming. There's no help for egocentric, karmic conditioning, self-hate. Right.
Right. So it's what's the alternative? Lose the relationship to the voices. Turn the attention to life. And that's what I was calling, saying, okay, I struggle with getting that, but not knowing how to do that, how to get there, how to make the transition.
Okay. And the thing about it is, Eric, it seems impossible until we do it. It's one of those things. Because all of our conditioning wants us to believe that if we are not focused on conditioned mind, on the thinking process, that we're going to be in big trouble and terrible things are going to happen to us. So as soon as people believe that, the trouble is deep. because we cannot sort out what thoughts are coming from where, what we're listening to, all of the things that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate does to control us happen in that process. So we're basically trying to figure out how to use the process that's messing us up to get clear. It's never going to work. So when we turn our attention to life, somebody was just talking to me recently about he realized that no matter how identified he was, how lost in with Janice in, you know, in the lake feeding the bad wolf, if he looked at the sky, he was suddenly there and clear. Okay? So this is a good example. So when you turn your attention, you know, in Zen the big deal is to the breath. That's hard for a lot of people because you can turn your attention to the breath and then the conditioned mind just jerks you right back into it with another thought about, well, yeah, but what's going to happen with, okay? So if you can turn your attention to something that's around you, right? So it's the sky. It's a tree. It's those are good, all right? It's the ground where you're walking. And you keep your attention on whatever that is, believe it or not, that creates the space for the intelligence that animates you to be able to communicate with you. It's a way to get attention out of conditioned mind. It's stories, it's yammering, it's urgency and something wrong and fear and, oh God, what if? Long enough for us to come back to the present and let life communicate to us.
Okay. I think I've done that. I meditate, yoga. I've been doing that on the dog walks out in the country, mindful walking and just hearing the crunch and smelling, and that's all the thoughts have happened. So maybe I'm touching on it. I'm having a problem taking that to this pile of papers in my desk that I need to work on that I find every reason not to be here for.
And okay. So all right. Good. Good. We can do this, Eric. We can do this. Okay. And the way karmic conditioning does it to us is urgency. Okay. Great, Sherry. But it's going to take me the rest of my life to do one paper. And the papers are piling up. I've got to get this. Okay. But if you can let that go and realize that those papers have been piling up, if you don't take an approach that actually works, they will continue to pile up. If you don't fall for all those stories of urgency and something wrong, then what you can do is practice in this way. So there you are sitting at your desk, and you put the stack of papers in front of you, and you might close your eyes for this one just because otherwise you'll be looking at the pile of papers and that can be overwhelming and intimidating. So you can close your eyes and let your attention move inward and go find the breath and you breathe and you're relaxing your body, letting the tension drain out of your neck and your shoulders. And you're just feeling your body and feeling the breath move in the body. And then you say to yourself, and then when I open my eyes, I'm going to pick up the first piece of paper, and I'm going to watch what happens when I do that. Now, you have your recorder right there, right? And you open your eyes, and you pick up the piece of paper that you need to deal with, and you watch what happens. Watch conditioning come in. Watch the voices. Watch the stories. Watch the urgency. Watch the fear. Watch the beatings. Watch all the stuff. You can turn on the recorder and say, what I'm watching is how conditioning is telling stories about what this means and catastrophizing and saying what it says about me, that this and that. And then when you feel clear about that, you look at the piece of paper and decide what you're going to do with that piece of paper. And you're watching. Okay? You're watching the conditioned mind start to scramble and get confused and go into chaos. And again, its whole routine, record about that. What I'm watching is how conditioned mind does this, 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 and this. And if you get through whatever it is on that piece of paper during this practice period, great. If you don't, you just put it back on the top of the stack for your next practice period. And you find a time every day to practice in this way. It might be a half-hour practice period. It might be an hour practice period. It could be 15 minutes, whatever it is. But you do it every day until you see through how karmic conditioning is paralyzing you and keeping you from being able to do the things that take care of you.
Okay.
You can see why I didn't try to type that out in the class.
Oh, yes. Oh, I do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't fault the answers. Like I said, sometimes you want to get in there and have a discussion, and you can't, and then that's the limitation of it. That's fine.
I'm glad though, Eric, that you chose to call in. I wish more people would, because that really is the way to make use of practice. You know, we have this one venue, and we're doing what we're doing there. But then when it's something else that comes up, you call into open air, or you come to a workshop, or you come to a retreat, or you do whatever. So that you can take it to the next level. Very good.
I'm glad you said that. I agree, and I do. I have several of your books. That's how this has progressed. Is when it didn't work over here, we tried another angle, and you give us many opportunities, and thank you for that. I want to thank you for the example of the walking and the meditating. That gives me an idea of what you mean by living life, so that's nice to know. And if I can beg you one more that goes on the theme, I get the part of
okay, you got to stop that. Again, though. Got to stop. It's doing that thing again. So I heard one more.
Okay. I was going to ask, I get the part about the practice at the desk, but it's getting to the desk. I'm amazingly good at sleeping in, at curling up in a ball, at mopping the floor, anything but even getting there.
Okay. All right. So, and at a certain point, of course, you know, you'll have to do the old Buddhist thing of having suffered enough. You'll just get really sick and tired of being controlled by that system, and you'll yell enough. But one of the things that can be helpful for you is to have a recording that gives you the information that you need to remember to inspire you to do this. So the recording could be along the lines of awarenesses that you have about what giving in to karmic conditioning in this way does to your life, the price that you're paying for it, how tired you are of letting a perfectly good life be wasted in these ways, maybe make a list of the things that you have done that you've been successful at, the characters and characteristics and qualities that you have that are proof that you really are up to this task, that you know that you can do it. You could add some quotes from some favorite people who kind of inspire you to grasp the willingness and dive in and that sort of thing. And so it's a similar practice. So if you're doing walking meditation, that's great. Then when you come back, sit down somewhere and listen to that recording. Listen to the recording when you have breakfast in the morning. Listen to it before you go to sleep at night. And you're just adding to it all of the encouragements that you need to take on this one project. And you will see that as you do that, the conviction will grow in you. The strength will grow in you to take this on. Now, of course, the next stage of this is remembering to turn on the recorder, right? So what people do with that is, you know, they attach it to their body. So you put it on a string and put it around your neck. You put it on your pillow so that when you go to bed at night, or you attach your toothbrush to it, or whatever, you'll have to figure out what you're going to do to remember that recorder and to listen to it. But again, at a certain point, that's why I said there's no help. Okay, there isn't any help. What it's going to finally come down to is you've got to turn the switch. You've got to decide that you no longer want to be victimized in this way, and you're going to decide to take your life back. And then everything that I've said or anybody else would say to you about this, they can be helpful tips and tools and techniques, but the real difference happens when you decide, no, I want my life.
I hadn't thought of the recording. I bought, I love audiobooks. I have your There's Nothing Wrong With You, and then I also bought the audio version, and then I got the second one, the What You Practice Is What You Have. I think I got them in the right order. And I was going to just read it into the and turn it into my own audio file, because I love listening to those lots of times when I'm driving, and you have in your audio file and in the book when you say, you know, some days you face your demon, you sit down, you stare at the bottle. And so I kind of knew that was coming. I just, and I have a lot of what you just said to do in the journal. I just haven't done it to my own recording, so I will try that as well. Thank you.
Very good. All right. I think I got that. You're going to, that the way you're going to support yourself in this is by adding to the recordings you've already got your own recordings, so that when you're driving around or you're doing whatever it is that you're doing, you're listening to Eric make commitments to and plans to turn this around and take his life back.
Yep, I get that. I thank you very much.
I'm not hearing a bit of that, Eric. So don't be a stranger, okay?
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Oh, that loud and clear. All right. Thank you, Eric. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Eric. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Great job hanging in there, Sherry. Technology
well,
is a challenge.
And for him, I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's like I'm not moving a muscle, and yet the thing is strobing like crazy. So,
Yeah. Okay, let's break for an important message, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
The Year of Deepening Practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Rico.
Hi.
Well, hello, Rico. How are you doing?
Well, I've been trying for quite a while to get on the air, and I guess this is my lucky night.
Yes. Well, ours too. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. It's perfect that we're talking about the voices, because I had such a attack, I guess you would say, by the voices a few weeks ago that caught me so much by surprise. I just wanted to talk about it. And I've been at this for a while, and I don't know if St. Francis would say we're making progress, but we're practicing and gaining skill in recognizing the voices. It's almost as if we're watching a political discussion on Fox News and we hear it, but who believes it? So I hear the voices, but, you know, like, who believes that? They're so ridiculous, and life goes on in the river. Well, I dedicated a lot of my energy to a project for the benefit of the Africa Vulnerable Children Project. Months and months, almost 7 months, and it finally came to pass, and a person came to buy it and to take it. And it was quite a large object. And as the person was getting ready to drive away, some of my neighbors who had watched me were just remarking on what a beautiful object it was. And, I mean, we don't get many standing ovations, but this was as close as I think I have had for a long time. And so the person drives away, and there's a kind of a glow of joy of being able to benefit the children in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling, the most vicious voice of hate came at me, that it was like getting punched in the stomach and doubling over.
Mm.
And I hadn't experienced anything like that for years and years and years and years and years. And the power of this, it was almost as if the voices of hatred were waiting for that special moment.
Oh, yeah.
The special
moment.
Oh, yeah. And for a second, I mean, really for about a second, when I'm doubled over in shock and surprise, I almost believed it.
Mm.
I almost believed the content of the attack, of the hatred.
Mm.
And then it was kind of like I saw the benefit of the years and years and years of practice of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kicked in.
Mm. Mm. And was it kind of as quickly as you just laid it out? I mean, there was a drop kick to the stomach, and then as you're bent over there receiving all of this hateful stuff, the kindness came in?
Exactly. It didn't take long. But what was so astonishing, and I hope I'm successful in reporting, was the power of this hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Just the power of it. And when I was listening to Jen and Ashwini tonight, I realized that what was so familiar to it was how I was attacked as a young child by one of my parents, so unjustly and so with so much charge and energy and such a terrifying attack. And I was just so grateful for practice that there had been, I don't know what the word is that we hear all the time, but what you practice is what you have, and that it's as if there was such a resource had been developed of this compassion, this loving kindness, and this compassion for this little guy.
Uh-huh.
And it showed up without me reaching for it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And was there a sense that that's who was there? That in that moment of feeling really good and relaxed and comfortable and you know, feeling so good and successful with what you had done, that little guy was kind of there basking?
Well, I mean, I didn't see it until this evening when Jenna and Shashwini were talking about the little one.
Uh-huh.
But I can see the connection now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, there's no fault in that kind of, we do. It is unconsciousness. I mean, there's no question that's what goes on. But what safer place, what better place for a little person to be there than in that kind of, that place of enjoyment and just feeling really good about what's happened and, you know, making a contribution to these little kids on the other side of the world. And you know, it seems like they're the neighbors, you know, it seems like such a wonderfully safe place for innocence to be.
Exactly. That was it. It was like innocence and joy, and the neighbors were like, I mean, it wasn't so much they were applauding me, but like the, and I don't want to use the word nobility, but they saw me go through 7 months of like, man, I was pulling my hair out sometimes. I don't have that much hair left, Sherry. So it was such a learning curve, very, very challenging project.
Yeah.
And to it's like the neighbors were patting me on the back saying, man, we're really proud of you that you stayed with it.
Uh-huh.
And then, bam, the atomic bomb.
Yeah, of hatred.
Of hatred. It wasn't like a kind of mild abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember hearing that kind of voice for years and years and years and years and years.
You know, it's such a good reminder for us that we really can't take time off. You know, we kind of feel like we're home free. I mean,
exactly.
Sort of behind me, I've been doing this practice. I got it, as you say. You know, who's going to believe those voices? They're ridiculous. And then, my God, when you least expect it, just to jump out and, well, I was going to say pound you over the head, but kick you in the stomach.
It was more like kick in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So another part of the story, and that is the response to this project was quite strong. And so there are people that are lined up that want me to build one of these projects for them.
Yes.
And,
well, I actually, Rico, I have a picture of it. So,
really?
I got the you sent a note and I see it. It's quite astounding. For those on Thursday night on the Learning to Love Learning, what you did was build a rowboat, a very spiff looking rowing craft.
Rowing
quite
class,
amazing.
A Boston Whitehall. But
yeah.
The point is, it was such a challenge getting the chemistry. I mean, this sounds a little like left field, but the chemistry is because it's a very progressive experimental design, and the local hardware store has been so wonderful in giving me advice and counsel. And well, I sent them a letter and thanked them for everything they had done for me. And today I went into the hardware store, and the manager says, "Rico, we want to do something for you for this project." I said, "What?"
Mm-hmm.
They gave me well over $100 in paint and materials for the next project.
Now you're in the boat building business.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't stop there, because they said, you know, the owner of the store was really interested in this project in Africa, and we want to know if we can put up a poster and accept donations here at the store and send them on to Africa.
Wow.
So it's kind of gotten out of hand, and I'm just an instrument of loving kindness and all of this. But it's kind of fun to watch it. And
no wonder the voices are so threatened. You know?
Well, the main message is that I want to report is a pep talk to all who are listening that, you know, it doesn't seem like much is happening in practice, but just if you put you know, what you put in, you get back when you most need it.
Yeah. And the part that you said that is so, I think, heartening for me, and I hope for other people, is it really was almost instantaneous. Even though the blow was horrific, the comfort came almost immediately. And that's big, because you know, in practice, we all have the experience of something terrible happens. The voices come after us. It's bad. It's ugly. And then at some point down the road, we disidentify and we feel better and we can see it for what it was.
But when it's that kind of boom, boom, we really know that practice is paying off for us in really, really good ways.
It's really paying off. And the other part of it is I've had three people who have observed me in this project and seeing how much – I mean, I spent a significant amount of my own money and materials to build this boat. And they're saying, no, you know, this next one that's coming up and there's a buyer all lined up, you should just pay for the last boat and the next boat and keep some in your pocket. And I said, you know, I feel so much in love with this idea of helping these kids that I want to give. And giving my time is fine, but I also want to give the materials, and they're rolling your eyes. You'd say, you know, you're kind of like a lame brain. And then the manager of the store gives me all this stuff today.
Yeah.
But I don't have – it's like – it was almost like, wow, it feels so good what gratitude wants to give.
Gratitude wants to give. And it's contagious, isn't it? It's contagious.
It's contagious because – The heart was meant to give. And when people see a way that they can immediately give to it.
Wow, that's nice. We know all of these things that the heart is designed to do, right? To pump and all of that. But the heart is designed to give. That's a beautiful image.
There's one more aspect, and that was, I had just read I did a self-retreat on I don't feel like it, and I think almost I had a premonition of it because there are so many times in my past life, like about 7 or 10 years ago, I would have got to a point with this project and I would have said, forget it, this is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But just put everything down and go for a walk and do some yoga and do Sazen, and I kept coming back to it. Almost as if, like, I don't want to do this was a call to say, oh, let's investigate and see what's really going on.
Right.
It's kind of like the bell to come to the Zendo. I don't feel like it. Oh, that's the call to the Zendo.
Ooh. That is very good, isn't it?
It's so fun, you know. Like whoever said Zen wasn't fun, they hadn't gotten on board with the Sherry train.
Well, I would say if anybody who doesn't think Zen is fun hasn't experienced Zen.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Well, Sherry,
that's great.
Thank you very much, and I hope I see you at the bridge walk.
Oh well, let's count on it. Thank you, Rico.
Praise the
Lord. Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. Wow, Sherry, I have the Kleenex out over here. That was amazing.
I know. That's amazing. Yeah. We have an amazing Sangha.
We do have an amazing Sangha, and I am so grateful to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Me too, Michael. All right. I think that's it for us, huh?
That's it for us. Until next week.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good night.